Hello and welcome to Feet First, a podcast focusing on the front of the pack in the UK trail and ultra scene. My name is Ed Scott, and in this episode, really excited to bring you a conversation with Poppy Collingwood after her second place finish at Julian Alps Trail Run by UTMB. Poppy is a bit of a rising star in the UK scene. She has had a lot of success over the last few years, particularly in the Southwest, racing on the Cornish and Devon coast paths. And recently she stepped up to an internationally competitive level, which she really cemented with this podium finish at a UTMB event. This was her longest run ever, 124 kilometers with just under 6,000 meters of climbing. She only started running post-COVID, believe it or not, at least running seriously. And since then, she has gone from strength to strength. She is a member of Elite Trail Team, a team of ultra runners based here in the UK. Many members of that team have been on the podcast before, including Hugh Chatfield, Keith Wigley, Chris Jones, Merrill Cooper, I think that might be it. But they are doing amazing things, helping to elevate the sport of ultra running and really invest in athletes, coaching them and bringing them up to an international standard. So really exciting to see Poppy's success at this event and hopefully the first of many podiums for her in the years to come. This is also a race that I've had my eye on for some time. I'm always interested in races that are perhaps a little bit off the beaten track or not as familiar to us as, you know, the big classics. And I think Slovenia is one of those locations that just has everything you need for great trail running, but perhaps is slightly less well known than the Alps and the Pyrenees and places like that. So really good to learn more about this awesome race, and hopefully one day I'll be able to toe the line myself. As ever, if you enjoy the podcast, please do give it a rating wherever you're listening. It really helps it get noticed. And you can leave a review on platforms like Apple Podcasts as well, a written review, which, you know, taking the time to do that, it's really, really appreciated. If you want to follow us on socials, then you can do so on Instagram at RunFeetFirst. And as of a couple of weeks ago, you can also find us on Facebook. I realize a lot of people don't use Instagram and want to keep up with the podcast in other ways. So if you search Feet First, there's also a link at the bottom of the website. If you go to runfeetfirst.co.uk, you can scroll down, see a Facebook icon, click on that, and it will take you to the Facebook page. Give it a follow. I think we're at maybe 10 follows, so, you know, a strong start, but the only way is up. But yeah, if you want to follow the podcast on Facebook, you can do so now. Before the episode begins, I just want to take a moment to thank Trailskin for supporting Feet First. Trailskin, if you haven't heard of them, they craft all natural, high performance skincare products designed for runners by runners. Each of their products is made to protect, soothe, and support your skin through the miles, whether you are grinding through ultras, hitting the hills, or just chasing your daily dose of freedom. All of Trailskin's products are handmade here in the UK. They are free from synthetic nasties and they are tested by real athletes. They've got a growing team of really awesome brand ambassadors who use the stuff day in, day out, including many previous Feet First guests. If you want to check out Trailskin's range, then head to trailskin.com. And whilst you're there, you can use the code FEETFIRST20. That will get you 20% off your next order when you spend £20 or more, and you'll get £5 store credit towards your second order. That is trailskin.com, and use the code FEETFIRST20 in the winter months with all the wet ground. Your feet will thank you. All right, here is Poppy Collingwood. Poppy Collingwood, welcome to Feet First.
Thanks.
It's a pleasure to have you on. Congratulations on your second place finish at, I have to remind myself this, Julian Alps Trail Run. I think the full name is it I Feel Slovenia?
Yeah, I Feel Slovenia because they've got, they put I Feel Love.
Yeah. It's good, like visual branding. I'm a fan of
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's cool.
How many weeks are we post-race now? A couple of weeks? Are you back to running properly?
I'm two and a bit weeks out, and no, I'm... Well, coach has basically said have like 3 weeks off. So I'm doing whatever I want to do. Some of it has been running, like running with friends, because that's kind of what I got, how I got into running. I loved doing those like chill, chatty runs. And yeah, it's been quite nice.
And am I right? Yeah, I bet. Well, that's good. That's a good sign that you want to get back to it, I think. Am I right? You only got into running post COVID?
Yeah.
So talk me through that journey and how you end up from there to top of the podium at some of the biggest races in the world.
Yeah, so lockdown happened and I downloaded Strava And I did the Run 5, Donate 5, Nominate 5.
Oh, nice.
And that was, I think that was my first one on Strava. And yeah, it's kind of just snowballed over time. I got into just running, I don't know, a 5K. I was lucky enough to be able to run a 5K from the get-go. I've always been active when I was younger, but not particularly running. And then, yeah, it was the second lockdown, the January lockdown, which was not, I don't know anyone who enjoyed that January lockdown.
No, that was a bleak moment.
I joined a triathlon club. I lived in Birmingham, joined a triathlon club, and that just got my speed up loads. Just doing loads and loads of fartlek and intervals. And then I did a 33 miler, so across Dartmoor, in aid of ovarian cancer with my dad. And that kind of got me going onto the longer stuff. And then I ended up doing well in my first few races. It's quite addictive. So I just kept on coming back for more and then getting further and further until, 124K in Slovenia.
And do you have prior to running a sport background generally?
Grew up climbing with my family, and I did sailing and rowing.
Right.
And that's about it. I didn't enjoy running. I ran when I was at university, and even so 2019, I did a half marathon in Bristol. I think I did it in 2:10 or something. I hated it. I hated every second. And I said after that race, I was like, I'm never running this far again. I thought maybe I'd do a marathon, but I thought absolutely not. And then COVID kind of made me end up being an ultra marathon runner instead.
And do you have a sense of what you chalk that success up to? Like, you clearly have a aptitude for this. Is it just you've become obsessed and you've trained really, really hard? Or do you think there's a sort of degree of genetic capability as well?
I think there's a degree of genetic kind of, my physique, I think, is good for running.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think I've generally been active. We've always been an active family throughout when I grew up. And I did a bit of skiing as well. I think it's just lucky with that. And then I think that time during lockdown with that triathlon club, it just made me get, I don't know how it happened, but it took, my normal pace would be 5:30 and it just dropped it to 4:30 in less than a year.
Per kilometre, I hope you mean.
Per kilometre, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm not a miler person. I'm definitely a kilometre person.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that just helped. That just got me faster. And then I think that's when the slight addiction start, or I just came hungry for that.
A quick break to thank Janji, the official apparel partner of Feet First, for supporting the podcast. Janji, if you haven't heard of them, they make awesome high-performance running apparel that is designed to help you explore and connect with the world around you on 2 feet. Personally, I've been absolutely loving the Run All Day tee. This is Janji's fastest drying top. It offers cling-free comfort in an ultra-lightweight design. And through the summer months, I was really enjoying it in the heat. But you know what? Even in this sort of temperate autumn that we're experiencing, it is a fantastic t-shirt. It's super thin. You barely notice that you are wearing it. I've got this shirt in Sandstorm, which is a beautiful sort of off-white beige color. But you can get it in all kinds of colors, including their recent collaboration with Alaskan artist Pauline Thomas, who lives off-grid deep in the Alaskan interior and makes these beautiful intricate designs. So if you want to check that out, it is the Earth Water Air design on the Run All Day tee. You can head to the link in the show notes and use the code FEETFIRST. You'll get 15% off your next order with Janji. That will help support the podcast and it will help support the spirit of adventure in running. That's janji.com, J-A-N-J-I, and use the code FEETFIRST for 15% off. All right, back to Poppy Collingwood. Well, you've done a lot of racing in the southwest. I know you live in Bristol. You've run a lot of the classic races around there. I just spoke to Lucy Gossage about her FKT on the Southwest Coast Path. And I'm curious with her and also Elsie Davis, who I know you've raced, running the Cornwall Perimeter. Are you ever tempted by these big, long, epic runs in the southwest?
I think, so funny enough, it was about a week or two before Lucy set off on her FKT, I thought, you know what, at one point, not now, but I wouldn't mind doing South West Coast Path FKT, or trying for the FKT. I don't think right now, I think I'm, what, 5 years now into my running journey.
Yeah.
And I think my poor little legs will throw a bit of a fit if I suddenly do, I don't even know how many miles it is. How many miles is it?
630, like 1,000K or more than that, yeah.
Yeah, so I think my legs would probably say, nah, not going to do that right now.
That's a grown-up's run, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And endurance only gets better when you're older, so I've got time to be able to do that. So I'm focusing on like the shorter, just mad long distance stuff.
That's exciting though, that the seed has been firmly planted. Check back in 10 years, everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
You also run for Elite Trail Team. I'm curious about how that experience has shaped you as a runner, and also just how you sort of found yourself on the roster, right? Because they seem to have a knack of spotting latent talent that is just blooming and really harvesting it and growing it.
Yeah, so how I got into Trail Team, it was kind of just by luck. I, a couple of years ago, saw Chelsea Creek on Instagram, and I knew that she'd won the Golden Trail Series. And on her bio, it said her coach, and I thought, she's in Bristol. I'll click on the coach and see if I can get in with him. And had an intro call, then started being coached by Doug. And then it was, I'd say 3 months after starting coaching with Doug, they opened up applications for ETT. And I was like, oh, Doug, I don't know whether I should apply. He's like, apply, definitely apply. kind of the rest is history. So that's when I joined ETT. I think the team is really shaped me for who I am. I think I have only done so well. Obviously, I've worked hard individually, but I've only got to where I am because of the team. All of the different things to think about when you're an athlete, I'd never thought about before. I never thought about my iron levels. I never thought really about sleep. I thought, yes, it's good to sleep, but I didn't actually appreciate how important sleep is for training as well as before the race. And then sports psych, to be able to manage your mindset going in. It's like the typical, you know, when you go for a marathon and everyone says, what's your goal? And everyone's like, I want to do sub-3, I want to do sub-4. Instead, it's full reframing of, yes, you can do sub-3, but that shouldn't be your main goal. And and obviously Doug being the coach, he's absolutely incredible. And I think he's, the results kind of speak for themselves in that.
Yeah, I've still never spoken to Doug. I keep speaking to people who've spoken to Doug, and he's built up this mythical image in my mind. So yeah, looking forward to one day meeting him, I'm sure.
Yeah, eventually.
How do you find the experience of being coached, particularly to a high level? I know that for some athletes, it's the right thing. For some athletes, find it, you know, very difficult to be told what to do. And beyond, as you say, beyond just running, thinking about all the other aspects of your life. Do you enjoy that, or does it drain sometimes?
I love it. I'm like a sponge in that sort of scenario. I love learning from people who are experts in their field. It's so interesting. And for them to, particularly in the nutrition side of things, I've done loads of testing. A lot of it is a lot of jargon that I don't really understand. Rebecca, our nutritionist, just helps kind of break it down and applies it to my specific situation. And yeah, I think I absolutely love it. Did that answer your question?
Totally. It's just something I've been curious about myself. I've had coaches in the past and I've struggled with it, and I think it's different personalities seem to gel differently with coaches, but it's an evolving process, I guess, as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose, yeah, it depends on the coach, doesn't it? Some coaches might be great and some coaches might not be. Doug's great because he's so flexible. He's will put in the plan. Usually I follow it to a T because I like to follow a plan, and but if I ever need to change it, he's so understanding, and he always makes sure. I think the most useful thing about having a coach is if you get injured. I've had it before I used to have a coach. I would get injured and be like, oh, I don't know whether to run, do I stop, but I really want to run because I love running. But having a coach is saying, no, don't run for 2 days. I think that's the most important part.
Holding you back a little bit.
Yeah.
I want to talk about this. I feel Slovenia. I want to talk about Julian Alps. But before we do, I want to just recap your year, because I know you raced at the Arc of Attrition earlier this year, and then you went and ran the Eriri Sky Race. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. So
that's a relatively... I don't want to generalize, but it seems like a relatively sparse running schedule. So did you have other races in that year, or was this sort of a focused build up to Slovenia?
Yeah, so this was... so my goal for the year was to hopefully try and qualify for Worlds. I suppose as background, the prior year I did focused on Golden Trail Series, which is... It was quite a lot of races. It kind of took over my calendar. So socializing was out the window. My poor fiance, he's my crew and cheerleader, and yeah, it took a lot of time out for him, and it was just quite it took quite a lot out of me. So I wanted to try and focus on the longer stuff and be able to have good long training blocks. So this year, ARC in January, and then just fully knuckle down, try as best as I could at 14 Peaks, which was a qualifier for Worlds, and then hopefully get into Worlds. Unfortunately, I didn't get into Worlds. And at that point, I scuttled around to try and find another race around that time that I knew that I was free. And then this Slovenia Julian Alps came up, and I thought, you know what, this is great. I really want to go to Slovenia. My fiance wants to go to Slovenia, so that's a tick box on that one.
Nice.
But it's sparse, but I've really enjoyed it because I can lock in for a good chunk and get that good training in, essentially.
Yeah, it's interesting because as you're on the ascent in the sport, I guess you're going to face more pressure than ever to race, particularly big profile events, which I'm sure we'll come to.
Yeah.
But it does feel like people are sort of beginning to understand that that's not sustainable. For instance, the classic example would be the Western States UTMB double that people hold in such high regard, but actually only one athlete has ever pulled that off, and she's a freak of nature. She's in a league of her own. So it's racing sustainably. It feels like it's increasingly something people are thinking about, right? Particularly
definitely.
Longer distance, like 100k plus kind of efforts.
Yeah, it takes. And after a race, it's, I suppose, once you could maybe try and do a quick turnaround, but for me, I think it's really important, particularly given that I'm still quite young in my running career, to not destroy my body and make sure that I recover after a race and then build from a healthy body, because it might work for 1 year, but maybe the year after your body's had enough.
Yeah, these things can take years to show up, can't they? And then all of a sudden, an athlete that you've been following for years is out of the sport because they can't come back.
Well,
you mentioned Slovenia. I mean, it feels like a bit of a hidden gem generally for tourists, but in trail running terms, it's not somewhere that's top of a lot of people's lists. So what's your take on the trail running culture in that part of the world, having gone there and raced now?
I really, really, really want to go back to Slovenia. It's such a beautiful country. The trails were amazing. Obviously, half the race was at night, so I can't comment on those trails as much. But during the day, it was... Also, where we were by Lake Bled, you go up and you've got Austria on your right and then Slovenia on your left. And it's kind of similar to the Dolomites in terms of like the national park around there. So it's just absolutely stunning. And the trails underfoot, some technicality, some scree, but never too much of anything. Always a nice variety, which I think was lovely.
And how are you training for trails like that on the roads of Bristol?
Good question. So for the ascents, I suppose the race had a lot of flat. So I suppose with any race, it's a lot of flat, but then also steep ascents and steep descents. With the ascents, it would just be going into the gym and going on the treadmill and the Stairmaster and just grinding it out, sweating a lot, getting funny looks, wearing ideally like a weighted vest, but I just wear my trail running vest with as much water as I can fit in with my bottles and backpack. And that's essentially it for the ascents. For the descents, it would be both gym work to try and get that like, durability within your muscles, as well as for the technical bit, at the top of Cheddar Gorge. There is a 400 meter section of quite technical terrain, and I just lapped that loads of times, and just to get me comfortable with descending. And that's about it. And then the flats was just any standard, like going around Bristol, the city centre.
That's cool to hear that you break it down so specifically into the component parts. A lot of people perhaps in the past have just thought you go out and run and get fitter, but to build strength in those specific areas, it's obviously paid off.
Yeah, yeah. And as well, because I suppose during, I don't really do any arms in the gym. I'm not the biggest fan of the gym. I go to the gym because I know it helps with my running. Yeah. And it knows it means that I can have a happy and healthy body. But I've also done a lot of the like the ski ergs just for the arms. I still don't think I've got the like high rocks technique down, but I've been doing that as well. I love poles when I'm doing these mountain races, so it's useful to have that strength there as well.
And am I right that this race, the 120k at least, summits a major peak in the area, which feels quite unusual for a UTMB race to actually go to the top of a mountain?
Yeah, so it goes up Stoll. I don't know if that's the correct pronunciation.
Yeah, I'm not going to try and say the name of the mountain range because it's very close to the line.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to be able to tell you. But yeah, absolutely stunning. But the previous year they didn't go up the top, I think, from the conditions, but we had perfect weather and really beautiful.
And it's also a point-to-point race, right? So you get this kind of epic journey across a landscape.
Yeah, and it's you start in this lovely town called Radolbica, I think.
No, and I'm not going to question that, don't worry.
Yeah. And it's a perfect one for spectators and supporters because you go up like a hill or a mountain, come back to Lake Bled, go up out on another hill, come back to Lake Bled, and then you go up Stoll, the mountain, and then it's just down the valley where you finish. And it's a nice one to spectate because they're not driving and stressing out with timings. It's all in the same valley.
So it's point to point, but like sort of twisty and turny and
like a bit of an S shape really.
Right.
But I can't stop saying that it's stunning.
Yeah, I've been meaning to go and check this race out for a very long time. It's been on my list for a while. From a competitive perspective, you know, you finished second, 17 hours, 37 minutes. How did it play out? Where was the high points? Where were the low points for you in the race?
Yeah, so this was the furthest, the longest time, and I suppose that's it. So the furthest I've ever ran. and the longest time I've ever ran. And so I went in starting at 9:30 in the evening, went in saying, right, for the first at least half, I need to just cruise. I need to not push myself because if you've advice from Doug, he was saying, if you push yourself too early on, you could end your race too early. But if you start controlled and then build it up, then that's actually the best way for me. To kind of try and win that race. So the first 60K, I cruised. It was lovely. Really, really enjoyed it. I, on the flats, I told my dad and then my partner who was out there crewing, I said, do not tell me what position I am until I ask. I'm in a really good state. I don't want to suddenly push too early on. I just want to keep cruising. And then at the aid station just before going up Stoll, I saw loads of people taking photos of me. I was like, I think I'm going to be top three right now because no one's going to be filming someone who's like top 10. Right. I mean, ideally they would, but for the content, realistically, I'll probably be top three. So I was at that aid station. I was with the other three ladies. Okay, this could be quite interesting. I was going up the mountain, which I thought wouldn't take me that long, but it does take quite a long. I think it was at least an hour or an hour or two just to climb the mountain. And it's quite useful at night when people are wearing head torches because you can understand when you're applying pressure. Because you see the head torch come back every now and again, and you're like, hello.
I've not thought about that, because I've always thought about it the other way, where someone behind you can see your head torch, which could be a disadvantage. But the fact that you can see the person up ahead can give you a bit of a fright. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And going up the mountain, I thought, okay, that's when I suppose I first started racing and applying a bit more strategy to my racing. So in general, I'm very good at uphills. I'm strong at power hiking with my poles. I'm just in a groove. I'm less good at my descending technical. That's like forever an area that I'm trying to work on. And so I thought, right, I'm going to apply some pressure going up this hill, but not overtake, to try and hope that she will bomb down the downhill. 30 kilometers of basically all downhill, some uphills every now and again. But I thought, if I apply that pressure, she could hopefully destroy her legs, and then I will try and take her on the flats, because I was doing really well on the flats prior to that. So I thought, let's go, let's do this. Yeah. And plan worked perfectly at the start. Applied that pressure. The sunrise was insane going up the mountain, and I was riding on a high. And then coming down the descent, it was very, very long. Very long, to a point where between kilometer 90 and 100, I remember thinking, yeah, I'm done. I'm kind of ready for this to be over. I'm a bit bored of just running downhill. I just want a change of scenery, which is ridiculous because, again, it was just so beautiful. But and I couldn't see the lady in first, so I thought, I don't know whether this has worked. Got down to the bottom, and at which point I had about 14, 15K left. And I, at that point, I was feeling all right, and spoke to my crew. They said, you're looking really good. The lady in first is chucking up. I thought, oh my God, this might be my moment. I thought, oh my God, this might be my moment. Like, this is going to be, I could do it. And I was trying to manifest and visualize winning. And I was like, oh my gosh, you've got this. Just keep going. So I went on my merry way. It was very hot at that moment. It was about midday. And then I hit the cycle path, which is flat and straight. Oh my God. The worst 10K I've ever
10K.
Run. So there were some bits in between, but I really, really struggled. And essentially, so I've tried to kind of think about why I struggled so much. I fell off a complete and utter cliff. And it would be a wab jab. So walk a bit, jog a bit. And I'd basically wab jab the whole way. And I thought, right, at this moment, I'm feeling a bit funny. I felt like I was going to faint, but I didn't feel like I was actually going to faint, because I've had that before. Just my balance was completely off. So I thought, right, I need to just finish this race. If I pass out and DNF, I will be so frustrated because I've come so far. So that's why I kind of started rolling back. So I'd jog until I'd feel like I really not well, and then I'd do a power walk until I feel all right in there, and then walk and jog and so forth. So, yeah.
And did you have a sense at this point of how far the person behind you was?
I knew that she was about 20 minutes from the top. But also, that's from the top, so much can happen in that time. So that was another thing in my mind. That's why I didn't just walk. I thought, I've been second for, I've kind of clung on to this second, and I really want to try and keep it going. So I don't want to just give up right at the end. I saw my crew in the penultimate checkpoint, and had a little cry and a wobble. Just because everything was in pain, but also I don't know what was going on with my head. And they said, just keep going. Afterwards saying, you looked awful. which obviously they're not going to tell you during the race.
Yeah.
And just after that checkpoint, you've got a really steep 300 meter climb. And then you're back down. I loved the climb because I was like, I don't feel bad about walking. Woohoo! So I could just walk, and that was fine. Went down the hill. I just decided with regards to the pain in the body, just from being up for this long, I decided to try and ignore that pain, just keep pushing through. I didn't have the weird sensation with my head at that point, so I just kept carrying on and, yeah, made it into the town and finished second, which was, yeah, pretty amazing. I thought I'd cry at the finish. Sometimes I cry at the end just because I think it's more relief that it's over. And I suppose proud of what I've done. But this was, conveniently, there was a kids' race that finished a few minutes before me. So there were loads of people out. And in my head, I was like, oh my God, all these people are for me.
And good job you didn't coincide with that kids' race and have to fight all these kids out of the way.
Yeah, that would be good motivation to sprint with the kids. Yeah. But yeah, and then came into the finish and was over the moon and, yeah, pretty spectacular.
Yeah, what a debut. I feel like I've got two takeaways from that. One is I've never heard the term wab jab, but I absolutely love it and I'm definitely going to be using that.
Oh, amazing.
That's a great term. Yeah. But the other is I really appreciate your like candid discussion, I guess, of the competitive instinct. I feel like it's not something that is maybe talked about enough, but like it's not that you're celebrating your competitor's misfortune, but like being motivated by the opportunities that presents you. Like that resonates so much even in a non-competitive environment.
Yeah, because as soon as you see them, oh my gosh, it's so lovely. And you're just like, oh, well done, you did such a good job. But obviously when you're in the race and you've got that mindset of, right, this is my goal. And there's like, what I love about this race is that without my competitors, I wouldn't have done as well as I did. I think the origin of competition is compietra. So that means better together.
Oh, nice.
Which I think is lovely because, yeah, if I was just doing that race on my own, I wouldn't be able to get anywhere near that time.
Yeah, competition is collaboration is another one I've heard, which is very true.
Yeah, exactly.
So this race must be, I'm just thinking about the numbers here, because you mentioned there's like a 10K flat bike path. It's 124K and it's got almost 6,000 meters climbing. So the remaining 110K, that's pretty steep in places.
Yeah, it's the... And I think that's kind of why I enjoyed it so much. It's flat, steep up, steep down, very steep down, and then flat again. And then again, steep up, steep down, and then another bit of flat, and then you've got the massive mountain. And that mountain was the steepest, but again, my favourite part. But a lot of climbing.
Yeah.
A nice bit of variety.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. I do intend to get out there. I mean, this earns you a spot UTMB, right, in 2026 next year. And do you get a choice, don't you, of the distances that you could race? Do you have a sense of which one you want to go for?
Yeah, so with the ARC as well, ARC I've got CCC, and then
of course
UTMB,
yeah.
I've got UTMB, so it's trying to decide between those. I think I'm gonna do UTMB,
do the big one,
because I think, I don't know, this might be a bit sinister, but if in 2 years' time I get hit by a bus and never be able to run again, I'd much rather say, actually, I've done UTMB, touch wood.
Yeah, in for a penny.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I am still young, my legs are still young in my career, but I think it's it would be silly to miss out on that opportunity when it's presented itself. And I love the long stuff. Obviously, 124K isn't quite 176. But I'm incredibly excited by that challenge, and it's just such a cool race.
Yeah, and you say you're young, but like that distance, the UTMB, the full race, it feels like so many more variables come into play than a race like certainly OCC, but even CCC, where kind of the raw athleticism does kind of win out. Whereas, yeah. I mean, we saw with Tom Evans, you could debate forever about who's got the higher VO2 max, but he just played the race so well this year.
Yeah.
Like strategically, that kind of stuff does start to matter, and it sounds like that's something you've kind of got a strength at.
Yeah, definitely. And as well as that, having ETT, so the team there, is that's when all of those little bits come into play. I think also with ETT, and I think not with ETT, with UTMB, it's running your own race.
Yeah.
What wasn't this year, but the previous year, I think, obviously, I don't know, but so many people DNF'd. And I think At least I take from what Tom has said that he just ran his own race and focused on himself most of the time. And I think that's really important in those long races.
Yeah.
And at least Julian Alps has shown me that, A, I can start at 9. So I start at 9:30, not quite 6:30, but or 6, is it? 6 or 6:30?
I think so, yeah. It's like a few hours before sunset.
Yeah. But A, I know I can do that. But B, I know actually I can just run my own race until I want to start racing.
It's interesting with the UTMB model and its sort of continued growth. I feel like you're going to keep seeing athletes earning spots at the finals, earning spots at UTMB, who aren't necessarily as experienced as the classic names that we hear all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates this really interesting kind of melting pot where, yes, there are names in there that we expect to do well, but there's also people who perhaps on an international stage people aren't as familiar with who suddenly come and do amazingly. Like I know the guy who came second to Jim at the OCC, I'm sure he's very well known in Italy, and I know that for fans of the sport he's quite well known, but I hadn't heard of him and he just exploded and there he is racing Jim Wandley. So are you hoping for a day like that to surprise everyone, or are you just going to go and sort of take it as a learning experience?
I would hope so. I think the dream would be to have a situation like that come about. So I'm taking my rest period seriously now to try and make sure I can build on a really strong body for next year. That is my hope, to try and be in a way that dark horse, or I suppose appreciate the race without any sort of pressure, but try and perform as best as I possibly can. But obviously time will tell. It'll be the furthest I've ever ran. So a lot of things can go right, but a lot of things can also go wrong. So we'll see.
Way, way back, I think my second ever episode of this podcast, I spoke to Emma Stewart, and this was post 2024 UTMB. And she sort of said that she really didn't like the experience because of the publicity and the noise and the cowbells and the photographs and stuff, which I guess is more of an issue when you're running in the top 10 from the beginning, as I think she was. But how do you sit with that kind of stuff? Is that exciting for you, or is that something you're going to have to learn to overcome, or is it just an unknown at this stage?
I think a slight unknown, but I'll have to learn to overcome. I'm not like a natural in front of a camera. And that's it.
Keep doing that for 176K.
I don't know. I'm a bit like, oh, I don't know what to do in front of a camera. And so I think that'll be something that I'll definitely work with the sports psych, is to try and learn to block that out. We even have earplugs with the noise. Because again, for Julian Alps, I was on my own for so much of it, so I could just lock in with my music and just focus on myself. But when there's so many other stimulus out there, there'd be a worry that would just make my heart rate spike. I'd want to push a bit more when I need to actually be controlling my own race.
It's funny you mentioned that, like posing for the camera, and I know it's kind of a joke, but I also heard that Katie Shide talking about that, the first year she ran Western State, she felt she had to smile to everyone. And the second year she realized how much energy she had wasted by doing that. And she had to just put the game face on, and she felt like she was being rude, but actually no one judged her for it. And no one judges the men for that. But it's an interesting pressure to have to deal with for potentially, 24 plus hours.
Yeah. And that's, even that I'm going to have to learn. I don't like being rude. So it's trying to, but then I suppose it's not rude. It's learning that actually isn't rude, and you just need to.
To
document.
I actually can't understand. Like, if I was one of the people lining the trail and screaming at someone, I would feel so uncomfortable. I don't understand that side of it. But obviously, fans are fans. They love what they're doing.
Yeah, and even so, one of my friends, she was working out there and following all the top 10 from either side, and she was saying that it was completely chaotic and no one had time to move, but also when a runner came, you just want them to do the best that they possibly can, so you're going go on, and then she was like, oh wait, I'm part of the problem, like I don't know what to do.
It's a crowd phenomenon, isn't it?
I'm
more of a quiet sort of arc of attrition golf clap stood by the trail. Well done, mate.
Yeah, it works perfectly.
On that, actually, I just wanted to ask about Arc, because you ran it this year. I know you won it last year, the 50, and you ran it behind Elsie Davis. I'm just curious about that experience of sharing a podium with Elsie. Do you have any reflections on that as we head back into the winter and it feels like arc season and spine season are increasingly upon us once again?
Yeah, which is my favorite season.
Oh, good.
I love running training.
Just for running. Yeah.
I think at the start of any season, I get so bored of the previous season that I convince myself that season, autumn at the moment, is my favorite season.
Yeah.
But I love dot watching. Well, over the past 2 years, I've been racing the arc, but the spine is.
Oh yeah.
I do not get that much productive work done when the spine is on because I'm just glued to the screen.
I think the genius of that event is because obviously the summer spine happens and that's great, but there's so much going on in summer. The genius of that is that there's nothing else happening in January, so everyone is watching this race.
Yeah, and it's super inspiring. Everyone doing the spine, but yeah, and then again with the arc, it was pretty spectacular. I didn't expect to come in top three at the arc. I can't remember what I was seeded, but I know that there was Amanda as well who was there, and I thought no way would I be able to come anywhere near them, and also Scarlett, and I thought right, I'll just need to try and run my own race, and ended up working my way through the ranks, and I thought I knew that at that point, like 15k left, I knew that I was in second, and I said to my partner, I was like, oh, where's Elsie? He was like, she's already finished. I was like, okay, never mind. I was like, oh, that's fine. But it's, amazing to be able to run with such an incredible runner.
Yeah.
And for me, it was so useful to kind of, I suppose, compare myself to that sort of international level and understand how I can grow and keep getting better. So, yeah, it was quite... Yeah, cool.
Yeah, awesome stuff. What does your year look like next year in the build up to UTMB? Have you mapped out what that race path looks like?
Yeah, so I've completely forgotten exactly what I'm racing. I have a race earlier on. UTS. Oh my gosh, how did I forget? Yeah. Oh, that was so annoying that I forgot. So yes, UTS. UTS is a big one. I've signed up for the 100K and that would be quite a long one. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's like relatively similar to the length of time for Julian Alps, hopefully a bit, not as far, as long, sorry. But UTS is a big one. I'm trying to find a few that might be local to my dad, so I could do a run with my dad, but also just a few in the lead up.
Whereabouts does your dad live?
To the race. They've just moved house to Chagford, so still on Dartmoor.
Oh, lovely.
But there's a race called the Hameldown Hammer, which is a half marathon. They've also done an ultra, I think, now this year. And that was the first trail race that I did. So I thought, might as well do full circle and go back.
Nice.
And see if I can, hopefully I can beat my time from ages ago. But yeah, so that just bits and bobs into the lead up of UTS, and then I'm actually getting married two weeks after UTS, and then my honeymoon is when I start running again, and then going full pelt into UTMB.
Nice. Oh, that sounds like an exciting year.
Yeah, it's going to be quite cool. It's going to be intense, but I'm kind of preparing the bricks now to start building.
Yeah. Nice. It sounds like you're taking the rest seriously, which is important.
Yeah, definitely. Body takes a lot.
Yeah.
And like I still cycle. I'm doing a bikepacking weekend this weekend, so it's being able to reduce the impact on my legs, but still keep the body moving and not just end up being really stiff.
Nice. Well, Poppy, really nice to meet and to catch up after this race. I'm really excited for the year that you have ahead of you. I think it's going to be the first of many good ones. I've just got one question which I ask everyone on this podcast, and that is, what do you think is the most important thing when it comes to success in ultra running?
I think loving running, loving what you're doing is the secret to success.
Nicely put.
Yeah. Thanks.
Poppy Collingwood, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been a joy. Thank you so much.